How's it going?
It's going, man.
Yeah.
It is, yeah, it's going.
Yeah, you're on the home stretch. How much you got left in the school year?
So this is the last week of classes, and then we've got finals next week. And we've got, like, someone's coming through and doing some pretty significant remodel work on classrooms and things during the summer.
Okay.
So in addition to the end of the school year normal stuff, I also have to, like, get everything boxed in my classroom. Like, I don't have to deal with furniture, mm-hmm. but, like, just everything on the walls, all of that's got to be, all of my supplies, got to get those boxed up.
Yeah, the kitten hanging from a limb, inspirational photo poster has to be rolled up. Yeah,
yeah, all 15 of them that I've got scattered around the room, because that's definitely how I roll. I look to cats for inspiration. But yeah, I mean, like, and it is. It's one of those things. It's really cool that it's happening. It's just the school year end really snuck up on me this year in, like, a powerful way. And so the fact that the school year sneaking up on me in a powerful way happened on a year where there's also some extra tasks I've got to get taken care of, that's obnoxious.
Yeah. Nice.
How about you, man?
Yeah, I'm all right. Still kind of recuperating, getting back in town from, you know, 4 days of Tahoe. So, like,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty nice up there. So coming back here and it's kind of flat and blah.
It's kind of not. Yeah.
I was like, oh, like, everybody always says that about Arizona. I was like, I love Arizona though. And then this was the first time I came home and was like, oh, I get it. Oh, but anyway, I'm becoming an old curmudgeon, I think. But
becoming.
Touche, sir. You have me on that one. But it did inspire me. I was like, you know what I need? Land. Somewhere where there's no people.
Yep, there we go.
That's it. I put a little bow on it. Yep. That's how it goes. Oh, well. All right. Let's hit an intro and jump into it.
Welcome to the podcast, Blue Collar Scholars. Not long ago, a group of brilliant minds met together at a pub to discuss their unfinished works. They recognized the value of coming together around delicious beverages and having meaningful conversations. That group was known as the Inklings. The Inkledo podcast here, we're working to be the second iteration of that group. So pour yourself a craft beverage, pull up a chair, and join the conversation.
All right, man, you had anything good to drink recently?
I mean, I've had some good things, but, like,
nothing
particularly noteworthy or new. I mean, that's really fair. It's been kind of a whirlwind. You know, we did a little meet the clan engagement party type thing showing my fiance off to the rest of the Enfields who hadn't had a chance to meet her yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were bummed not to be able to make that, but we were not the best company after flying and driving and all that nonsense.
I would have pointed and laughed at you had you shown up. Like, you guys already met her. You guys hosted us and did dinner for us and everything. Like, the idea of you guys flying back in from Tahoe that day and, like, getting into cars and coming out for an Enfield clan gathering. Like, no, that doesn't make any sense.
It was just a little too much driving, yeah.
How about you, man? You drink anything exciting?
So we stopped at a coffee shop up there. So I had this, like, really fun plan. We flew into Reno, and so, you know, I was going to show Kristen, you know, the biggest little city in the world, you know, and all of that stuff. And so, you know, Google Earth and, like, looked at Reno from Google, like, planned this little trip out. And then I didn't realize that the downtown Reno area is like four blocks and it's a butthole. Like, I mean, it's not, there's nothing nice about it. It's terrible. And so we were done in like 15, 20 minutes. And so we were actually just walking back to the car because we couldn't find a place to eat that wasn't, like, filled with smoke in a casino or, you know, looked like we were going to come out with Hep C. So I actually stopped she wasn't a police officer. Like, if you've been downtown and they have the, like, copper assistants or whatever they're called, you know, like, they were the,
okay.
You know, they're like the city, they're city employees that are just meant to, like, help direct tourists, basically.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So I didn't assault her. I waved her down and she stopped. And I asked her, I was like, hey, where's the eating? So she was, like, giving me all the tour stuff. I was like, is there a place that, like, isn't here, like, that doesn't, like, I don't want to eat here? And she's like, okay, well, if you're willing to drive, she's like, there's, like, if you get past the big buildings, there's, like, some cool, good stuff that way. We're like, okay. So we just got on the road. We drove and found this little coffee shop. I don't remember what it was called. I think Midnight Coffee Roasters or something like that. And it was this really cool little spot. There was, like, a steakhouse on the ground floor, which they were grilling, so it was all wafting up into the coffee shop, so it smelled fantastic. And it was up on the upstairs, and it was a nice open place, and their coffee shop was like a bar, actually. Like,
okay.
You walked up to a bar, you sat at the bar, they had other stuff. So it looked and felt much more like a bar than a coffee shop. And their coffee was very dark roasted, but it wasn't bitter. So, like, this was like the first time in a long time that I've had a coffee where it seemed like they knew what they were doing. Like, they were trying to roast darker for people, but also didn't want to just burn it, you know, type of a thing. Kristen wasn't super fond of it, but I was like, I can respect it. You know, like, it's something that, you know, like, our parents would like that, and it's better than Folgers, you know? So it was good though. They had, like, an open roastery, so I got to see their roaster.
Oh, nice.
They have a Mill City roaster, which was, like, the roaster that I was, like, I had all sorts of plans for us. Like, if the coffee sales had taken off, like, I had it mapped out for years, in case you were wondering. So, like, all of that, like, emotional disappointment that I had to process came from all of the expectations that I built. Sold 2 bags of coffee to be like, I'm going to make millions. Planned it out. Didn't happen. That's all right. But it was great to see the roaster. Got a breakfast burrito there that was freaking rad. I mean, it was, one burrito was big enough to feed 2 of us, and Kristen didn't even finish her part. Like, it was a good burrito. So, yeah, I mean, it was nice to just sit, have, like, they had, like, the big open windows. So you sit at an open window because there's a breeze. Big old burrito. It's coffee. It was nice, man. It was good. It was a really, I really dug the location. Coffee, I think they would have had some other coffees I would have liked better. But it's a spot I would definitely go to again. It was a cool spot.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. So there was, I wanted to hit, like, 3 coffee shops. But then I realized that that's probably overdoing it. And then also, once we got into Reno, I was like, I don't really want to go to a whole lot of places here. Like, I'm pretty good. I kind of want to get out of here.
Yeah, fair enough, man. I will say that is the advantage to trying to be a tour guide somewhere that you've actually been before can be helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'd been to Reno before.
Oh,
But I was 10.
Got you. Yeah.
And so I remembered the big sign. And then I think my memories bled together, like, erased Reno and filled it in with Tahoe. And so, like, I just remembered the sign and then beautiful. And I was like, oh, cool. And then, you know, from Google Earth up top, it looks like just a cool little city. But when you get in there, it's not. It's pretty sketch. But anyhow. Okay. All righty. You ready for this, man?
Let's do it.
Okay. So it's been a while now, but it's starting to warm up here. But I was dropping the girls off their jiu-jitsu class and then, like, walking. There's this cool little path along the New River. I don't know why they put river in the name of a river, but it is. And it's a walking path. It's kind of nice, actually. And so I was walking there to get my steps, and I was like, hey, I should listen to something to, like, fill the time. And so I was listening to some classics. I listened to, the dude that made a deal with the devil to sell his soul.
Oh, Faust.
Faust, yes. So I listened to the play on Faust. It's like the something tragedy of Dr. Faust, whatever. And then I moved into the something by a guy. Woo! Marcus Aurelius. He's a big deal. Like, he's a guy. Like, that's the name I...
The something by a guy. You know that one book by that one guy? You know, the one with the face? He had a name. They called him something.
You know what I mean. That guy.
Yeah.
But, like, everybody's been talking about, like, the Stoics are such a big deal right now. And so I was like, I know what Stoicism is, but, like, I've never read Marcus Aurelius or anything. I was like, okay, let's just listen to it while I'm going up and down this little walkway. And it was okay. Like, I only made it, like, a few chapters in. It wasn't life-changing for me. Maybe if I make it through the whole book, I'll realize that I'm living life incorrectly. But I don't think so. You know?
Probably not.
Probably not.
I've spent a decent amount of time when I was a student having to read on the Stoics. And yeah, I mean...
It can kind of be summed up pretty quickly.
Yeah, there ain't that much.
Yeah.
Which is actually their philosophy,
right,
by the way.
Right, it's like minimalism. Like, you can, if you it takes a long time to explain minimalism, you don't understand it. Like, you did it wrong, you know. So anyway, but there was one line that caught me, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of interesting." And so, like, I wanted to bounce it off of you because I've been chewing on, again, with stewardship and agency, mm-hmm. and trying to figure out, like, how are you a steward and an agent, free agent, and all of these types of things. But there was a line where he talks about that the gods gave man everything they need to do what needs to be done. And so basically what he was saying is that he was essentially saying, you know, like, don't go begging and relying on the gods because they already gave you what you need to do it. Right. So, like, you have a will, you have a brain, like, you can think, there's the tools in the world, like, you have everything you need to solve the problem. You just have to go solve the problem, right? Essentially.
Right.
And so that was interesting to me because it did kind of connect to that sense of agency. And so then my question is do we have everything we need to solve the problem? Like, mm-hmm. is that how we are created? Or if not how we're created, how we're redeemed?
So it's one of those things where in typical annoying fashion for me, I'm going to say yes and no. But, like, to a certain extent, yeah. You know, and lines like this always bring me back to Beowulf with the whole God helps those who help themselves, mm-hmm. type of thing. Because
yep.
there is this very real sense of agency and our will and the fact that, you know, we are created with what is needed to do the will of God. However, at the same time, it's not something we can do disconnected from God. You know, like, that's one of the kind of key differences between the understandings of, you know, pagan Rome and Christian Rome, is the idea that, like, the gods in pagan Rome, in Roman mythology, and in Greek mythology before them, they're not that much different than, like, Marvel and DC comic book heroes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're human beings with special powers, but they're still just as broken, flawed, and weak as we are.
Right.
And so, yeah, if that's our view, if our deities are Zeus or Jupiter or Mars and Ares, you know, whichever naming convention you want to go with, mm. from the Greek or the Roman, if those are our gods, then yeah, absolutely. Duh. They created you, and they weren't that interested in what happened afterwards.
Yeah.
Unless they're bored up on Olympus and are looking for some entertainment, then they're going to take an interest in you again. But with the Judeo-Christian, like, understanding of who God is as this loving father creator who didn't just create us and then leave us be, but who, like, the fact that we continue to exist now is because God continues to actively will our existence. Like, that level of separation and disconnect doesn't really work for us. We are created to be dependent rather than independent. Like, we are created to rely on God. However, at the same time, like, that's not... We aren't created to rely on God in that sense of, like, a complete and utter...
So I was going to say, can we break that down a little bit?
Yeah, let's do
that. So, like, it feels weird to me. And not that I think it's wrong, but just that I'm just like, that's... Because, like, I think, to go back to the Garden of Eden, right? Like, God commissioned Adam, and then he went about his business. It didn't seem like there was a dependency on God. So, like, if that was the initial... Again, like, I know that wasn't the fulfillment of mankind, but, like...
Sure.
It wasn't like God and Adam, you know, planting trees together type of a thing.
So...
Like, it seemed like Adam had a job to do, and then he went about his business, right?
Sure. But, like, again, that job and... See, the problem for me is this idea of just going about your business, because it's too compartmentalized a life. You know what I mean? Like, Adam and Eve, yes, they had work to do in the garden, but they also walked side by side with God in the garden.
Okay.
Yes, they had a job to do in the garden. The job was given to them by God. God was the one who, like, set the parameters for it. You know, Marcus Aurelius, when he says, you know, the gods have given man all that is needed to do what needs to be done, there's not even necessarily an implication that the gods are the ones who are deciding what needs to be done. There is kind of a, like, why even ask them? Like, look, they gave you this stuff. It's yours now. Go do it. It is the difference between ownership and stewardship. Like, Adam and Eve tended the garden, not for themselves, but for God. Like, it was God's.
That's,
and they were the stewards of it.
That's it right there. Okay. Yeah. And that there was a will behind their job and, like, what they were doing to fulfill, not just whatever they fancied. Like, you said it better. Exactly. Like, you hit it on the head for me. It's that difference that God still cared about what was happening and that they were working towards his will, not just, like, here's a toolbox, go make whatever you want. Nobody cares about you.
Right. And this is where the language makes it tough, because there isn't a word for what is between dependence and independence. It is just, in our language, you are either dependent on someone or you are free of them and independent.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the reality is, for our relationship with God and that idea of the task that we've been given, it is somewhere in between those two. Like, God desires that we should use the gifts he has given to discover what it is that he would have us do. So it is still us making use of the gifts. It is still us discovering. And it is still ultimately us deciding to cooperate or not. And so in that sense, we are independent. We are free. Mm-hmm. However, in order for us to, like, actually find the fulfillment and the satisfaction that we desire, it is going to require us relying on God. Like, I'm not seeking my will. I'm not seeking what I think would be best. I'm seeking what is it that God would have me do, and how can I best do that with what God has given me.
Yeah. So that kind of takes me into the follow-up point/question, which is, like, I railed on the songs all the time that, you know, like, always talk about, you know, giving up your will, giving up your life, giving up all these things, and it's always rubbed me wrong, right? This is not new. I trashed it multiple times. But it kind of goes into this, right? So, like, it wasn't until this point where I was thinking about it, I was like, oh, well, like, we should be using these gifts that God gave us, our will, our determination, our what creativity, whatever God gave us,
mm-hmm.
for his glory, for that, you know, all of those things. I was like, but then at the same time, like, we screw up so often that I started to understand why people were like, hey, no, take this and you use it, kind of a thing, because it's like, I don't. And so there is this interesting kind of dynamic where we're talking about dependency and independent. And so I guess maybe, and this is probably more on the human side than God's side, absolutely, you know, 100%. But it's like, where does that play in to where we are giving these gifts to do these things, but like we screw up so often that then we end up becoming more dependent on God to do those things? Like, he's doing the heavy lifting. Like, we're kind right. of just dead weight on him, other than that, like, if he didn't love us, like, we would yeah. be worthless to him, it seems like.
Oh, absolutely. And, like, the thing is, because I'm largely with you on the songs. Like, I try to keep in mind the idea of poetic language and the fact that, right. like,
yeah.
they probably don't actually literally mean, God, make me an automaton that will simply do what you would have it do at all times.
Right.
Take away my ability to think, know, and appreciate the gifts you've given me. I don't think that's what they mean.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It is still what I hear. And so, like, it's still annoying to me. But, like, I think what you've hit on there is an important line to be aware of, though. Like, there is a difference between acknowledging, you know what, God, when I try to figure things out, I make a mess out of it. Help me recognize your will. Help me find it. Help me avoid the traps and the pitfalls that are there. Help me do that. As opposed to, again, a shirking of responsibility.
Yeah.
God desires relationship with us. And because he desires relationship with us, he has given us a part to play. We can't play that part by abandoning it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if when I say, God, take my will, if what I mean is, God, help me to have your will above my own, help it be my desire to seek out those things that you desire.
Form on my will.
Help, yeah. Form me, shape me, guide me, educate me. If that's what I mean when I say, God, take my will, then that's a statement I can get behind, and that's a statement that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
If what I mean, though, is, God, you gave me a will and an intellect, and I don't want it anymore. You do all the thinking for me. You decide these things for me. That's not trust. That's not faith. That's ingratitude. Mm-hmm. Like, that is being given a gift, which is given for the sake of relationship. Like, I don't know, man. You remember, I don't know if you had this experience, but, like, when I was a little kid, I remember being given, like, my little toolbox. And, like, it had some of my dad's old screwdrivers and hammers and stuff in it. And I would be given that. And then, like, I would go out and I would help my dad. I help, air quotes, heavy, heavy air quotes, help my dad with some of the work. Like, I wasn't actually helping him. The job undoubtedly gets done faster without me there. Why was I given that gift, though? Because that brings with it the opportunity for me to be working side by side with my dad. For him to be handing on at various degrees, at various stages, these little bits of knowledge and insight that he has about doing this work and kind of teaching me some of that. But ultimately, mostly more than that, it's just an opportunity for us to spend time together. And if instead I get that, and I'm like, nah, I'm going to go play my Nintendo. Like, here, Dad, you can do this better than me. I'm going to leave you my toolbox that you just gave me, and you go ahead and fix these things.
Yeah. Yeah, that sucks.
It can be an innocent rejection of the gift.
Right.
Like, there's not any intended harm there. It's an unawareness. It's that childish innocence and naivete and unawareness of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But it is still ultimately a rejection of the gift, and on some level,
the relationship.
A rejection of the relationship that that gift was intended for.
Yeah.
And so if I actually look at God and I'm like, hey, I know you gave me free will, but look at how badly I keep screwing things up. I think you and I can both agree we'll all be better off if you just make these decisions for me. I'm going to go ahead and just chill out here and let you take care of it. Even if we mean that from a totally innocent perspective of, God, I am so tired of messing up everything that I do. And I want that perfection that, like, I'm striving towards. And the only way I can get it is through you. So I'm gonna leave it in your hands. What I'm doing is I'm saying, these gifts you gave me, they're not the ones I want. They're not the ones I think I need. So instead, you just go ahead and you give me the, like, clearly marked out roadmap. You tell me exactly what I need to do, and I'll do those things.
Yeah.
I'll be your automaton. My life will be easy, and I'll be moving towards what's best, because you know best, God.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense to me. And, like, I wish I had a little button where I can, like, ring into the middle of our sound here. Like, every time I have, like, a little epiphany, like, just, like, make a ding sound or something. But, like, your analogy hit perfectly on my little epiphany, and it was the move from dependence to independence. And I was going to use my kids as the story, in which you did. Right. Essentially.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's my job as a parent, is to take these kids that are utterly dependent, 100% dependent on us for life. Right. And slowly move them from 100% dependence to hopefully not 100% independence, because, like, I still want to be a part of their life. But,
exactly.
But essentially for them to be able to stand on their own. Right. Like, I need them. And this is a conversation I had with my youngest. I was like, look, these are things that I need you to not do, because when you are on your own, you will lose at life if you continue to do these things. Right. Like, I need you. This is behavior that we have to fix.
Mm.
And so it's been hard, but, like, I'm working on some bad behaviors as well as trying to build up good behaviors. And it's a long, slow process, like you said, at different stages and different things. And again, I've been drawing it towards the relationship. You know, like, one of the things that she's done is started telling stories, like, when she gets in trouble, and be like, you guys never let me have any fun. You know, like, take it to, like, the ultimate extreme, because it's at the end of a fit, right? And I'm like, look, if you keep telling yourself these stories, eventually you're going to start to believe them. And eventually, once you start to believe them, you're not going to like me anymore. Like, you're not going to want to be around mom and dad, because you think that we're always picking on you and that we never let you have any fun, and you're essentially not going to like us. Right. I was like, that's the rejection of that relationship, because she wanted what she wanted. Right. But she rejected all of these different things, and essentially it breaks the relationship. But I think that if I'm going to head into, like, say, a life lesson, it is agency, which is something that I'm still kind of grasping, is like a child. Like, we have a child's agency, right? Where we have different levels of dependency based on where we're at and where we're, you know, how fast we're progressing, type of a thing. And so, like, there is still dependent on God, because I like what you said with there's always his will, and his will is relationship. So there's always going to be a level of dependent, like, I'm married, right? Like, there's never going to be a point in which I'm not dependent on my wife, because I'm not separated from her, right? Like, it's integrated. So I I'm dependent, you know, by necessity of being integrated. And so I think the biggest thing is just for me, as I'm trying to understand agency as a Christian, is that, oh boy, I don't know, doing the best I can with what I got. Is that the summary basically? Like, it's like, we're kind of like, I'm struggling with it because yeah. I'm having a lot of these different thoughts, but I haven't like wrapped it up into a single, like, this is what I want to take away from this summary, just because it's a progression. And so it's hard for me to take this, my understanding that God is developing us to choose freely and to choose his will. He's forming us, but it's a long, slow process. It's a development process, not an instantaneous change, right? Like, it's yeah. not a snap your fingers, wiggle your nose, genie kind of change that you become this Christian and now your will is formed to God. You have this, you know, fixed everything. But it's more of a infant who is dependent on God to slowly learn and form and make decisions that please God, and then accepting the discipline when you displease God, and you're growing as a Christian, type of a thing. That was a lot of words, and I don't think it's...
No, but like, I think at the end there, I think that last stretch you were talking about, actually, like, that makes a lot of sense. It is. It's that recognition that it's a process. And, like, to a certain extent, needing to be able to make peace with where you're at in that process. Not settle into it. You know, again, our whole thing about, like, we're not finished products. We're works mm-hmm. in progress. Mm-hmm. Like, not just settling in where you're at, but, like, recognizing, oh, you know what? I don't need to ask myself to have it all figured out now. Mm. I'm not supposed to. I am in process on that. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that's kind of where, like, my life lesson would be going, is this idea of remembering that it is relationship and that relationships are process. Like, a relationship isn't a result thing. It is a constant spending time growing in, deepening in. And so going back to the songs that tend to drive us both up a wall, like, no, I don't want to give up my agency. I don't want to give up my will. I don't want to give up my intellect. What I do want, God, is I want the humility to allow you to keep shaping it. Mm-hmm. Like, help me to recognize that my intellect is darkened. There are things that I don't know, that I cannot know. Like, my mind is incapable of processing these things. And so I will have the humility to recognize those limitations and allow God to steer my agency, not to take it. I don't want him to take it back. I don't want to pass the buck back to him on it, but that I will, like, hey, you know, God, I'm still not sure. Like, I want to be working side by side with him, like the little kid working next to their dad. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I've got the hammer, and I want to use it, but I kind of want to use it on this glass. Is that where it's supposed to be used? No? Okay, cool. Thank you for letting me know.
Right.
Oh, you pointed out the nail. Perfect. Let me go to town on that guy for a little while. Yeah. And it's going to take me 15 hits, and I've definitely bent the nail in half to where it's now looking more like a staple than a nail. But, like, regardless, I'm taking that guidance, and I want to seek that guidance. And I want to trust in that guidance.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, that, again, my will, my agency, my intellect, these are gifts that are designed for relationship. And so if I try and seize independence for myself, then I've got the gifts, but I don't have the mission. Mm-hmm. I don't have the purpose for those gifts.
Yeah.
And so then they become, you know, quite frankly, a lot like the toolbox I've got sitting here at my apartment complex. I have a toolbox. Why? Because I am a man of the Enfield family. And so I have a toolbox because eventually there will be a thing I need to fix. but I'm in an apartment. Like, I am not allowed to fix most of the things that break here, even if I wanted to. And so, like, they end up sitting on a shelf, largely neglected. Not worthless, but they won't be worthwhile until I once again am able to find and reconnect them to the mission for which they are intended.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Yeah, and I think there's a level you hit there for me too, is like there's a level of patience and like you said, trusting the process. And like I watch my girls get frustrated as we cook because there's levels, right? Like, no, you cannot have the chef's knife. First, you have to learn how to use a measuring spoon, right? Like, and then mise en place. Like, there's all of these layers that you have to build on before, like cutting and like burning stuff are the last two steps to cooking, and it's the smallest piece of cooking.
You have, but they're the coolest.
They are the coolest, and that's what we freaking want, man. And I think that is ultimately the source of my frustration. I want the freaking cool stuff, and I have to learn how to like get everything out of the cabinet. It sucks, man. You know, but you got to trust the process, and so I think that's largely like we just want to go from zero to sainthood. And not go through the process, but that's just not how it works. So, oh, good epiphany. That feels good. I like it. Got anything else on your brain?
Nah, man. I am in end of the year mode. I have nothing on my brain.
Right on. All right. With that, everybody, we will say
adieu.